I remember the morning I looked at my beautiful garden and realized it was a lie. It was a lovely hobby that provided a few salads and a sense of peace. But if the grocery store shelves went empty tomorrow, my family would be hungry in a week. That realization changed everything for me. It shifted my focus from aesthetic beauty to actual caloric density. Moving from a hobbyist to a serious producer is not just about planting more seeds. It is a fundamental shift in how I view my time and my land. It requires a level of discipline that most people never have to face. I had to stop playing in the dirt and start managing a resource. This is about the transition from being a consumer who gardens to a producer who survives. It is about building a legacy of self-reliance that stands firm when the world outside feels shaky. Chapter 1. The Capacity Audit. I stood in the middle of my backyard with a clipboard and a heavy heart. For years I told people I was a homesteader. I had the chickens and the raised beds to prove it. But when I actually sat down to do the math, I realized I was just a consumer with an expensive outdoor hobby. To move into serious production, I had to start with a cold and hard audit of what I actually needed to survive. Why it matters. Efficiency is the difference between a homestead that feeds you and a homestead that breaks you. If you do not know exactly how much food you need to produce, you are just guessing. Guessing leads to waste, or worse, it leads to hunger. A serious producer treats their land like a calorie factory. Every square foot must justify its existence. This audit ensures that your energy goes toward output rather than just activity. The scope of production. The first step was defining what serious production looked like for my family. For us, that meant producing at least 70% of our annual caloric needs. Most hobbyists focus on vegetables like tomatoes and lettuce. These are great for vitamins, but they are low in calories. A serious producer shifts focus to staples. I had to look at potatoes and winter squash and grains. I had to look at my land and ask if it could actually support that volume. Safety and local codes. Before I moved a single shovel of dirt, I had to check the legal landscape. Many people ignore local codes until a neighbor complains. When you scale up, you become more visible. I looked into the zoning for my area to see the limits on outbuildings and permanent structures. I also had to consider the physical safety of scaling up. Larger production means heavier tools and more physical strain. I evaluated my own physical limits to ensure I was not building a system I could not maintain safely. Tools and materials for assessment. I did not need a tractor yet. I needed data. My primary tools were a soil map and a tracking spreadsheet. I used a simple soil test kit to find out exactly what I was working with across the entire property. Hobbyists often treat the whole yard the same. A producer knows that the north corner has more clay and the south gets 2 more hours of sun. I also needed a way to measure my time. I started a log of how many hours I spent on basic maintenance versus actual harvest. The steps of the audit. I started by weighing every single thing that came out of the garden for 1 month. It was eye-opening to see how little weight I was actually producing. Next, I calculated the buy list. These were the items I was still buying from the store every week. If I was still buying 10 pounds of potatoes a month, then I knew exactly what my production goal needed to be. I then mapped out my current infrastructure. I looked at my fence lines and my water access points. I realized my garden hose was not going to cut it if I tripled my planting area. Checks and fixes. During this audit, I found a major leak in my plan. My compost system was too small. I was producing enough compost for 4 raised beds, but I was planning for 20. I had to fix the input before I could increase the output. I also realized my storage space was non-existent. There is no point in growing 500 pounds of potatoes if you have nowhere cool and dark to keep them. I had to pivot my plan to include a root cellar solution before I even bought the seed potatoes. Long-term care. A production audit is not a one-time event. I now perform this check every February. I look at what we ate and what rotted in the cupboard. I adjust my crop plan based on the reality of our kitchen. Self-reliance is a moving target. As my kids grow, their caloric needs change. As the climate shifts, my land's capabilities change. Staying in a state of constant assessment is what keeps a serious producer ahead of the curve. It turns a hobby into a reliable system of survival. I stopped looking at my garden as a place to relax and started seeing it as my most important job. Chapter 2. Scaling the systems. The transition from hobby to production is where most people fail because they try to do more of the same. I quickly learned that you cannot just scale up hobby methods. If it takes me 1 hour to water my small garden by hand, it will take me 5 hours to water a production plot. I do not have 5 hours to become a serious producer. I had to stop working harder and start building better systems. why it matters. Systems are the only thing that allow a single person to manage a large-scale homestead. Without automation and smart design, you will burn out within 2 seasons. High production requires consistency. Plants do not care if you are tired or if you had a long day at your day job. They need water and nutrients on a schedule. By building systems, you remove human error and exhaustion from the equation. This ensures the survival of your crops and your own mental health. The scope of the shift scaling meant moving away from the boutique look. I stopped focusing on pretty wooden garden beds and started focusing on long in-ground rows that could be managed with a wheel hoe. I had to think about flow. Everything on the homestead needs to be positioned to minimize steps. The tool shed needs to be near the worksite. The water source needs to be central. I redesigned the layout of my entire production area to create a hub-and-spoke model where I wasted no time walking back and forth. Safety in the field. As the systems got larger, the risks changed. I moved from hand watering to high-pressure irrigation lines. I had to learn how to secure these lines so they would not trip me or become a hazard for my children. I also began dealing with much larger volumes of organic matter. Managing a 3-ton delivery of wood chips or manure requires proper lifting techniques and heavy-duty boots. I made it a rule to never work in the production field without proper footwear and eye protection when using power tools, materials, and automated tools. The biggest investment I made was in a high-quality drip irrigation system with a battery-operated timer. This one tool saved me 10 hours a week. I also invested in bulk soil amendments. Buying bags of fertilizer at the store is for hobbyists. A producer buys by the yard. I set up a dedicated area for bulk deliveries of compost and mulch. For tools, I moved to professional-grade long-handled implements. A high-quality stirrup hoe and a broad fork became my best friends. They allow me to prep and weed large areas without destroying my back. Steps to systematic growth. I began by installing the backbone of the water system. I ran a main line to the center of the field and branched off from there. Next, I implemented a no-till permanent bed system. Digging up the soil every year is a massive waste of energy. By using heavy mulch and broad forking, I preserved the soil structure and reduced my weeding time by 80%. Finally, I established a nursery area. Serious producers grow their own starts from seed because buying hundreds of transplants is not financially sustainable. Checks and fixes. The first week the irrigation ran, I found 3 blowouts. The pressure was too high for the tape I had chosen. I had to install a pressure regulator at the source. I also realized that my no-till beds were attracting more slugs than usual because of the heavy mulch. I had to adjust my system to include ducks for pest control. This is the reality of scaling. Every new system solves one problem, but often creates a small new one that needs a fix. Care and maintenance. A system only works if it is maintained. Every autumn, I blow out the irrigation lines to prevent freezing. I sharpen my hose once a week during the growing season. A dull tool is a dangerous and inefficient tool. I also keep a repair kit in a bucket in the shed. It has extra emitters and tape and couplings. When something breaks in July, I do not have time to drive to the store. I fix it on the spot and keep moving. Efficiency is not about being lazy. It is about being effective enough to survive. Chapter 3. The harvest logistics. Growing the food turned out to be the easy part. The real challenge of serious production is what happens once the food leaves the vine. When I was a hobbyist, I could eat my harvest as I picked it. Now I am staring at 60 pounds of green beans all arriving at the same time. This is where the transition becomes real. This is where the kitchen becomes a processing plant and the homestead becomes a business. Why it matters. Harvesting is the moment of truth. If you cannot process what you grow, the entire year of work is wasted. Serious production requires a plan for the surplus. This matters because food security is not just having food in the field, it is having food in the jar and in the cellar. Proper processing also opens the door to the cottage industry. It allows you to turn your extra work into a way to pay for your seeds and tools. It completes the circle of self-reliance. Scope of post-harvest. The scope of work changes from the field to the indoors. I had to designate a specific area for dirty processing and clean processing. The dirty area is outside where I wash the root crops and strip the husks. The clean area is my kitchen, where the actual preservation happens. I also had to look at my storage capacity. I realized I needed a dedicated freezer and a wall of heavy-duty shelving for my canning jars. Legal and safety red lines. When you move into serious production, you might want to sell your extra. I had to research the cottage food laws in my state. These laws dictate what I can sell from my home kitchen without a commercial license. Generally, things like jams and pickles are safe, but anything low acid requires more oversight. From a safety standpoint, I had to master the pressure canner. Water bath canning is fine for fruit, but for the staples I was growing, I needed to learn how to safely process vegetables and meats under pressure to avoid botulism. Tools for preservation. My kitchen tools had to be upgraded. I moved from a small stock pot to a 23-quart pressure canner. I invested in a high-quality vacuum sealer for long-term freezer storage. For the root cellar, I used simple wooden crates that allow for airflow. I also bought a commercial-grade dehydrator. It allows me to process large amounts of herbs and peppers without taking up any shelf space. These tools are the bridge between a summer harvest and a winter meal. Steps for a successful cycle. I follow a strict harvest window. I pick in the early morning when the sugar content is highest and the heat is lowest. The food goes immediately to the cooling station. Next, I prioritize. Some things must be canned today, while others like winter squash can sit for months. I use a rotating inventory system. The oldest jars move to the front and the newest go to the back. I also keep a waste log. If I find myself throwing away jars of pickled beets because no one likes them, I stop growing them next year. Checks and fixes. I learned the hard way that a power outage can destroy a year of work. My freezer full of meat and berries was at risk. I had to fix this by investing in a backup generator. I also found that my glass jars were cracking because I was thermal shocking them. I adjusted my process to ensure everything was preheated correctly. These small checks in the process are what ensure that the food you spend months growing actually makes it to your plate. Care of the harvest. Maintaining a pantry is a daily task. I check for broken seals and signs of spoilage once a week. I keep the storage area cool and dark and dry. I also care for my equipment. The seals on the pressure canner are oiled and the dehydrator trays are scrubbed. The transition to serious production is only complete when you can walk into your pantry in the middle of January and see everything your family needs to thrive. Building this life is hard work, but sitting down to a meal that came entirely from my own hands is a feeling of power no grocery store can ever provide.